And now, of course, it's time for the garden conversation, and I've got Janine with me to help introduce the garden conversation, because we don't actually have any gardeners. Well, I don't know. I know I'm not a gardener. I'm not sure how much of a gardener you are.
Yeah, I don't know that I have a green thumb, maybe more of a black thumb. But okay. Yeah, it's really snowing outside, and there's not a lot of gardening happening today. And I love the garden talk, garden conversation. Folks created some stories for us for today. I swear they transport the warmth of a garden in this darkness. So, yeah, they've arranged these special stories for us, and Mardell will explain a little bit more in this introduction.
Okay, here we go.
Here we are in the midst of the holidays, and the only time that most of us are thinking about gardens is if we need to find a gift for some gardener that we know. So we here at the Garden Conversation have decided that we're going to forget the education and the inspiration component this week, and we're just going to tell stories. We have a moose story from Stephanie Scott, a bear story from Melissa, a poem from Mandy that was published in the U of A Spring 2018 title Echoes, and a story of my own garden ramblings. We hope you enjoy, and happy holidays to you all.
Okay. Okay, I have a large section of land that is part of my garden, and I decided I needed a fence around it. And so I built this fence that is consistent of posts, and in between each post there is a another piece of wood that's about, it could be about 6 feet off the ground. And then under that piece of wood, there is a 3 foot tall fence, wire fence, chicken wire, I think. And so my idea was is that the moose wouldn't get in because they would bump their heads against the piece of wood that was at the top of the post. And I'm very proud of this development. And my friend, neighbor, George Figdor came up and said, "Stephanie, those moose are just going to walk right under that board, and they're going to just climb over the little piece of chicken wire, and, you know, that's going to be the end of it." I just said, "Oh, George, you're so cynical." And you know, and he went away, and pretty soon a female moose and her twins came to the garden, and it was the twins that stepped over the fence, over the chicken wire, and under the board, and were roaming around in the garden. Fortunately, it was the end of the season, and they were eating whatever it is that they were designed to eat. And I couldn't even watch. Oh my God, George was right. And I walked away with these children still inside the fence and the mother going around and around and around on the outside of the fence. And I was imagining that she would just break the fence and get them out. But I went into the house, and half an hour later I looked out, and they were all out of the fence. So the children walked over the fence, and out they went. And there's never been another moose encounter in that situation again. So it's a less expensive remedy for your fencing in to keep the moose out of the garden. And it does work most of the time.
That's Stephanie Scott sharing her garden story on this special edition of the Garden Conversation Holiday Edition. Coming up next, we have a story from Melissa Aronson.
Well, this is Melissa Aronson with my bear story. So it was a beautiful, warm, sunny May day. Dandelions were blooming, so because they were blooming, I knew that it was time to put my transplants in. So I was out in the garden putting in the transplants and just totally zoned out, enjoying being in the garden and soaking up the sun and the vitamin D. And I caught a glimpse of a movement over my right shoulder. And so I turned to see what that was. And about 20 feet away was this beautiful blonde grizzly bear. And she was eating dandelions. So she was helping me in the garden. I had no idea how long she'd been there, so I just talked with her quietly and gently, and, you know, just made sure she knew I was okay and made sure that she wanted to let me know she was okay. And as I kept talking to her, I just slowly backed myself into a door into my house and closed the door, went into the kitchen and got a couple of pots and pans and came out and banged the pots and pans to scare her off, because beautiful as she was, I didn't really want to share my garden with her. And that's my garden story. So pay attention to what you're doing when you're zoned out.
That's Melissa Aronson with her garden story on the special holiday edition of The Garden Conversation. Coming up next, it's a poem from Mandy Ramsey, and this originally appeared in Tidal Echoes, the University of Alaska Southeast literary magazine.
Bouquet. My practice. This meditation in action, picking bouquets, gifts from my garden. Blazing orange tiger lilies, tall purple delphiniums, the long plumes of violet veronica, plump white and fuchsia peony buds with their companions, the ants, who nudge them to bloom in the summer light. Tall yellow iris with green sword blades standing upright, dwarfing their wild cousins who glow purple with yellow cat eye centers. There are pansies galore in shades of deep grape, merlot, and gold. Their giant faces smile back at me as I kneel down, asking, who wants to join the bunch? How about some magenta fireweed spikes? Or if it's springtime, the sweet, dripping perfume of the delicate white Tahitian daffodils. Which flowers will offer themselves on the rare occasion that I gather the gift of a bouquet for a dude? Mint always jumps in, flanked by friends of forget-me-nots, along with the feathery fronds of a green fern, perhaps a lone lime-striped hosta to showcase a lava-glowing tulip. This practice of listening, arranging, and offering the gifts of my garden, my sanctuary, my life canvas, brings me so much joy. For I know that soon the crimson season will arrive, when the maple tree will stand center stage, revealing her inner sunset.
That's Mandy Ramsey on The Garden Conversation this morning. The Garden Conversation folks pre-recorded stories to share with us, and we have one last one from Mardell.
All right, here's Mardell.
My father just recently passed away, and it's led me to think about the connections that are formed between generations, how one generation's history continues to live on in the lives of the next. And there's evidence of that in my own life. Let me take you on a walk around my gardens and home. Let's start in my living room, where there is a beautiful and old vase for long stem flowers. It was my mother's. So when my parents moved into a senior apartment and we cleaned out their home, my siblings and I took a few things for memories. None of us are too sentimental, so there wasn't much competition for the items. But when this vase came up, I remembered it well from my childhood, and I really liked it, so I brought it home. I had no idea how much joy that it would bring me every summer as I keep it filled full of fresh-cut flowers from basically June to October of every year. I also had no idea of the connection that it would create with my mom. A few years ago, my sister came up to visit, and she said, "Oh, you are just like Mom. She always brought flowers in the house." I didn't even remember that about my mom, so it even made the connection stronger for me. While we're here in the living room, if you look up, you're going to see a Hoya plant sprawling over the railing. That came from Nancy Soggy. The last few years of Nancy's life, she had a form of dementia. I visited her weekly, and we went out and we looked at the same plants and the flowers, and she told me the same stories over and over. But in between those stories, I would ask her gardening questions, as I was pretty new to the area and I had a lot to learn. She would forget to water her inside plants, and I would always try to figure out ways that I could water them without her knowing, because she would have been mortified to have a guest come over and water her house plants for her. Fortunately, the Hoya doesn't need to be watered very much because it likes to dry out between, so the Hoya survived. So one day when she finally said, I'm getting rid of my plants, I'm tired of them, about the only one that was left was this Hoya plant. And I said, I'll take it. So I took it home. And little did I know that someday I would have the perfect place for this plant with the conditions that the plant makes the plant very happy. And it brings me a lot of joy to remember Nancy and to have her in my home as one of my long-term garden mentors. So let's go outside now. Leaning against the garage is a compost sifter that Vivian Menaker convinced me to make. I used to think that big chunks in my compost was just part of a homemade compost, until I went to help her one day, and Nancy was sifting her compost through a 1/4-inch hardware cloth screen. And I went home and I made one just like it. So now I have compost that is nice and soft and fine that I can mix into my soil mixes. So Vivian lives in my compost, and she would be very happy to hear that, as she was one of Haynes' biggest advocates for compost. Now we'll head back into the backyard. This is where one of my boats sit that I use as a raised bed. How this came into my life is I advertised in the classifieds for a derelict boat. And I got a call from somebody saying, there's a boat in back of the fairgrounds that you are welcome to have if you want it. It's sitting on a trailer that you can't use or can't be pulled, so you're going to have to figure out a way to get it home if you want it. So we went back and looked, and it was the perfect boat. It was a 20-foot riverboat, so perfect for a planter bed. We brought it home. We put it on a flatbed trailer and brought it home. It was full of all sorts of nice additions. It had wood railings and other things that had been put on the boat to make it a nice boat. And as we were pulling this, we had to, of course, strip that off to make it a good planter. And as we were doing this, I really felt like we were tearing apart somebody's hard work and love of this boat. And I even said to Diz, I said, this is really strange. I usually don't have any connection to boats. Boats are just boats, and I don't really care about them that much. But I had a really strong feeling about this. So we continued. We got the boat in place. We filled it with the dirt, and we planted our first crops in it. A couple months later, I'm talking to Leanne one day, and she says, oh, I am so glad you got the boat. And I looked at her blankly, and she said, you know, Art's boat, you did take that, didn't you? All of a sudden, it made perfect sense to me why I had had such a strong reaction. I've always had a huge amount of respect for Art Jess, and I feel really privileged to have his boat in my yard. I've named the boat Heart's Desire with the HRT capitalized. What an unexpected connection to have in my garden. So I don't have anything that I know of yet that reminds me of my dad in my garden. He was a farmer for 96 years on the flat, fertile lands of Minnesota. And in his last years, when I talked to him on the phone, he'd always tell me what the weather was like and how the corn and hay crops were doing, even though he had not grown these crops in many years. My parents came to Haynes to visit us shortly after we built our home here. And when he went home, he told my sister that they must be crazy for living on a mountainside like that. He had helped with setting up some of our gardens, so I guess he had experienced the dilemmas and the difficulties of working and living on a mountainside. As a farmer, he did not have much appreciation for mountains. He called glaciers just big chunks of ice. But he understood his Minnesota land, and he managed to keep it productive for many years. So maybe it's the land that I live on that's my connection with my dad.
You just heard a series of short stories from the Garden Conversation, pre-recorded in honor of the holidays. And I just wanted to thank Mardell, Mandy Ramsey, Melissa Aronson, and Stephanie Scott for compiling their stories. Happy holidays.